Die groot trek saam Dopie en Nina, Weesda, tussen 3 en 6.
Al ons gaste vir vandag se onderhoud is Engels. So die meerderheid van hierdie uur gaan in Engels wees. En ek hoop nie dit gaan pla nie. Ons het 'n paar gaste wat ons genooi het en nou dit was na aanleiding van 'n artikel waarop ons afgekom het. En die artikel het gelei: The Department of Basic Education has covertly introduced the ECE Toolkit, a gender ideology and gender identity training program for primary and pre-primary teachers and by extension for primary and pre-primary school children. Now these children are aged 0 to 9 years old. And on the line with us, he's the executive director for Freedom of Religion South Africa, Michael Swain. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Can you just quickly tell us, Freedom of Religion South Africa, what exactly is it and what does it stand for?
It's basically a legal advocacy organization, and we protect and promote the constitutional right for freedom of religion, which is Section 15 of our Constitution. And in this instance, of course, it particularly pertains to parental rights, because your freedom as a parent is, and your right as a parent, is you have an inalienable right to educate your own children according to your own views and values. And the state has the responsibility to consult with you on that education. And you also have the right particularly to make sure that you are passing on your religious and your cultural views to your children. And this is something which should be supported in law rather than perhaps contradicted. And that is really why we're involved in this case. We are bringing the legal framework to bear, because what has happened is that this ECE toolkit is training teachers to effectively put a single ideology, to create an atmosphere, if you like, a climate with which all education will take place, with a single ideology of what is commonly known as transgenderism. And that is a belief system. That is where you believe that you are different from the gender that you were born into. And obviously, that's a very confusing thing for those people who suffer from it. But if you're telling children that this is something which is the norm, then obviously you're teaching them something which is contrary to what their parents will have taught them. And this particular training actually states at the beginning that its goal is to help children, and we're talking little children here, break free from what it describes as harmful gender stereotypes that hold them back in life. And of course, many parents wouldn't think that what they're teaching their children is harmful or holding them back in life. But that is what this toolkit is. That's the goal of this toolkit, one of the goals.
Michael, let's quickly touch on that. You've mentioned the legal aspect of this. In terms of our constitutional rights, especially that of the parents, if the Department of Basic Education does roll this out in full across the board for all schools and educators, where would this legally leave you as a parent in terms of what you can and cannot say towards the schools that your children are in?
Well, the White Paper on Education, which is what the Department of Basic Education has produced, sets out the framework within which they should be operating. And it says that parents have the primary responsibility for the education of their children. They have the right to be consulted. They have an inalienable right, which means that it's guaranteed, not just granted, to choose the form of education best for their children. And it says particularly in the early years of schooling, and that's what the ECE toolkit is obviously involved in, and the right to choose the cultural religious basis of that. And specifically, the law says, and there's a court case where we were a friend of the court, known as the Oh God case, which says that schools are ideologically neutral. It doesn't mean to say that there's no religious beliefs or worldviews, but there must be a balance. You cannot impose one ideology, because schools are not there for the purpose of indoctrination. They're there for the purpose of education. And so you must have a balance. And again, all these things, unfortunately, don't seem to be present in this ECE toolkit. Mm.
Michael, we're just going to go to the traffic quickly, and then we'll introduce our second guest. He's a national spokesperson for the Department of Basic Education as well. And we'll get some comment from them as well. Michael Swain, he is the executive director van die Freedom of Religion South Africa. Ons het saam met ons op die lyn the spokesperson for the Department of Basic Education, Elijah Matlanga. Elijah, thank you so much for taking time to chat to us today.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me.
Elijah, can you please explain to our listeners what is the ECE Toolkit and what is its current status in terms of rollout?
The toolkit is all about is a document that is given to practitioners at ECD level to use when they plan programs that they are going to be implementing in their schools in terms of the content that they need to be incorporating in their programs. So it is aimed at empowering them to make sure that they align with the department's vision for inclusion in schools, making sure that we have a gender-responsive pedagogy.
Now, Elijah, in terms of you mentioning inclusion, with this toolkit, isn't that going to be excluding people as well?
No. It cannot be inclusive and exclusive at the same time. Because what we have experienced in the basic education sector in the past few years is situations where you have learners who go to court to make certain demands about their rights in schools and whether they are made to feel welcome in school and whether they are included or not. And in almost every case, the courts have found in their favor that the environment in the school is not inclusive and that it discriminates against certain people. And we have had to go back and look at the things that we do as a department to say, how responsive are we when it comes to the rights of individuals, especially learners who come to our schools expecting an environment that is conducive for their learning, an environment that is welcoming, but one that is also taking into account the gender-based violence that is currently causing problems in our society at the moment.
Now, you mentioned now you want to be inclusive, but this infringes on everybody's basic right, and correct me if I'm wrong, and Michael, maybe you can chip in here. This infringes on people's basic right who want to go to school and who want to choose their religion, their sexuality. They don't have a problem with it, but if somebody goes to court because they're not being included, that excludes other people and my constitutional right. Isn't that so, Elijah?
No. It's quite the opposite. I think you've got it completely wrong there. Remember, when your right is protected, it does not mean the other person's right is being diminished. It means that everybody's rights are protected. For example, take the issue of religion in school. The Constitution says that there is no religion that is bigger or better than the other, which means they must all find space to coexist in one environment. So when you have Christians practicing their Christian beliefs, reading the Bible at assembly, it does not mean that they are infringing on the rights of people who don't believe in Christianity, or let's say you are Muslim or whatever else that you might be believing in. It does not mean that when the Christians read the Bible in front of learners in the assembly, your rights are being trampled upon, because you are given an option not to attend that particular gathering. So your right is also protected. In fact, it goes on to say you should also be provided with the resources that will make you feel comfortable to practice whatever observances that you also wish for yourself. So it's about inclusion as opposed to exclusion. So if someone has the time and the resources to go to court and they are successful in convincing the court, it cannot be the problem of anybody else, because that person took it upon themselves to go to court to secure their rights and make sure that those rights are practiced in the environment where they find themselves. So you also have the same right to do that if you feel your rights are being contradicted.
Michael Swain from 4SA is also on the line. Elijah, Michael, do you have a comment on this?
Well, I think, of course, the big question is, what is being taught in schools and how is this program set up? Because, yes, it is supposed to be inclusive, but one of the goals, and it's on page 9, and I'm just going to quote straight from this toolkit because, you know, you need to hear what it actually says. It says, ECED teachers and practitioners play a central role to help them, that would be little children, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-year-olds, break free from harmful gender stereotypes that hold them back in life. Now, presumably, those are the gender stereotypes that will have been taught to them by their parents, who have every right to teach them so. So how is that being inclusive of the parental rights of those parents, let alone the children? And then it goes on to say that in the classroom now, it says growing up, and this is now page 39, many of us were taught that if you were identifying a single person by a pronoun, you had to use he or she. They was only for groups of people. Those rules have changed. It's like, since when did basic grammar change in the school context that we are now identifying individuals by a plural name? And then it says they and them, and this is the point they're trying to make in this, and this is also reading from page 39, is now a non-binary way to address someone. Using they or them, and here's the purpose, lets children know that we cannot assume someone's gender identity just by looking at them. Now, for many parents, that would be an extraordinary thing to hear, because you know, and you've probably told little Jimmy that when you see little Jenny and she's got long hair and she's a pretty girl and she looks like this, then, you know, you must treat her with respect. You must, you know, be respectful to her. You're a boy and she's a girl. But now you're telling the same little boy who's got no possible cognitive way of telling the difference that this is actually not true, that he might be looking at a little Johnny for all he knows, that you literally can't believe your eyes. How is that not going to confuse little children? And how, therefore, of course, when you're literally causing divisions between the parents and the children, and of course the children and or the parents and the teachers, how can that possibly be in the best interest of the child? And that is the primary constitutional obligation of the Department of Education.
Let's give that to Elijah. Elijah, your comment?
Yeah, I can answer that. It's a very, very easy thing. You know, I thought I was going to say something else other than what I've heard before. So what happens is that when you teach children and you ask them to draw a picture of their parents at home, you find children drawing a picture of a man and a woman, and they say, these are my parents. And then you find other children drawing a picture of a woman and a woman, and they say, these are my parents. And another child will draw a picture of a man and a man and says, these are my parents. And that's their reality. So we are saying, if you are growing up in that environment where you have same-sex parents, and it is not your choice, by the way, because they would have adopted you there, and you are growing up in that environment, and when you say your the names of your parents, and it happens that it's a male and male or female and female, you should not be discriminated against. You should still feel welcome to express your reality in the presence of your teacher or even your learners. No one should laugh at you because you are still a normal human being. And there shouldn't be discrimination on the basis of your lived experiences. So that's what it means. That's what inclusion means. We are saying the old picture of parents being a man and a woman has changed. And that's the reality of this country. We have the we have the Pride March that takes place every year in the big cities in this country. Have you ever objected to that? And if you look at the complexion of the demographics of those people who are leading these demonstrations, you will see that it's a complete picture of South Africa with all its diversity. So we cannot pretend that this picture only resides in the streets when people are marching to express their sexuality, but it does not obtain in the school. It cannot be. We need to be realistic.
Sorry, guys, I'm just going to cut you off quickly. Elijah, could you give us another 5 minutes?
That's fine.
Fantastic. So Simon will be laying for vandagse gesprek is Michael Swain, as the executive director of Freedom of Religion South Africa, and Elijah Matlanga, as the spokesperson for the Department of Basic Education. So where did we leave it?
Michael, you had a comment on what Elijah just said about same-sex parents, etc.
Yes, of course there are mixed families. There are man and woman, women, women, men and men, single parents, that nobody is debating or even questioning whether that's not a valid family unit. Of course it is. In this country, sexual orientation is fully protected by the Constitution. Same-sex couples can marry, they can adopt, they can have all the rights of a heterosexual couple. Nobody's disputing that. What we are saying is that when you start to teach little children things that their parents will probably not have been teaching them, like, for example, you cannot assume somebody's gender just by looking at them, like, for example, asking a little boy or a little girl for their preferred name and pronoun to demonstrate that gender identity should not be assumed, this is a different category altogether. This is actually potentially confusing them, because you're literally saying that a man can be a woman and a woman can be a man. And you're telling a little child that. Now, little children have no way of processing that. And frankly, it's not even appropriate, potentially, I think many parents would think, to discuss that sort of thing with little 2, 3, 4, 5-year-olds. You know, they literally at a stage where they don't even know how to pick out their own clothes, let alone understand constructs like gender fluidity. And this is what is being taught in this toolkit. And that's why it's concerning. Parents don't know this is happening. It is an ideology. It is a single ideology. It is creating the atmosphere and the climate, if you like, within which this education will take place, which is exactly what the minister said. It's supposed to be creating a context, if you like. Well, this is a context which puts forward a belief system which says that a man can be a woman and a woman can be a man, and all you have to do is to believe whatever you want to believe. And then gender and sex, as it says on page 5, sex and gender exist across a continuum of possibilities. Well, not everybody would agree with that statement. Many parents wouldn't, and they haven't been consulted on this.
Thanks, Michael. Elijah, has any studies been done on the effect that these types of programs have had on children elsewhere in the world?
Absolutely. In fact, if you read our statement, you will see that we are saying we have drawn from a wealth of scientific research done from across the world. We have never done anything in South Africa without consulting researchers, without checking other studies and other practices from around the world. That's why we work very closely through UNESCO, which is a UN education organization. I was there for a week last week to check on these things, among others. So we always check what other countries are doing. We take what we believe can work in our context. So there is nothing that is out of context. What we need to accept is that society has changed. Things are moving. Life is not static. We cannot continue to hold on to our views as though life is not dynamic. In fact, Michael is also describing the problem in his objection that they are not objecting to the fact that adoption can take place and that there are various family units in the country. But the worst part for me is when he says that some parents may not have taught their children at home. That's exactly the point. That's why you need education to come in and play its part. It needs to teach. And remember, this is my last point. This toolkit is not for learners. This toolkit is to empower adults, educators, on how to handle these complex matters.
Now, Elijah, just before we let you go, will this be open for public comment? And where does somebody voice their opinion on this?
No, you can write to us in the department. You write to us, we will engage with you. We have realized that there's a lot of propaganda that's going around from people who have read a little bit, twisted it. So we always welcome engagement. We've never done anything behind closed doors. Every single thing that we do in the sector is open, because it affects 14.3 million children in the sector. If you add those that are in ECDs, about 15, 16 million. And many more millions households. So we don't take that for granted. It's a huge responsibility that we have. So you can write to us, info@dbe.gov.za, or you can give us my own email address, which you have, mthanga.e@dbe.gov.za.
Elijah, just one last thing. You said you've consulted with many people and you're happy to engage with people. On big matters like this that we've seen the government put in front of us, especially the different departments, you've always consulted religious and community leaders. Why have the guys now spoken to the media and said, we've not been consulted in this and our opinions have not been taken into consideration?
No, it's a usual complaint. We have a large stakeholder base, even from the religious community. They are not united themselves. We had a meeting on this very matter 3-4 weeks ago. Not everyone was there. The leadership of most of the religious organizations were there, but not everyone was there. I personally went to address another gathering of religious leaders. Not everyone was there. So those who choose not to participate in the formations that communicate with, they are more likely to say they were not consulted. But again, consulting does not mean that we agree with you and we incorporate what we are going to do. It means that you are aware of it. But remember, this is just a toolkit. It's not a policy. It's not a law. It's just a simple guiding document, a toolkit for a teacher in school.
Can I just say who was there at the meeting? Because we were actually present at that meeting, and I don't want this to go unnoticed. It was a coalition of religious leaders. They were represented at the most senior level by the general secretaries or by the presidents or by the heads of those organizations. One of them was the Evangelical Alliance of South Africa. They represent 4 million Christians. One was the United Ulama Council of South Africa. They represent 1.8 million Muslim people. One was Nkululeko Yizizwe Association. They represent up to 10 million people from African traditional spirituality faiths. One was SACOF, who represents another 5 million people of the Christian faith. So there were 20 million people present. And the Department of Basic Education simply has dismissed that as saying, well, you're just not, there must be other people. Look, when 20 million people are sitting opposite the table from you, it's a very good idea to listen, because that represents more people than voted in the last election.
Mm. No, but then that's a contradiction, because it means that you were consulted. It means that you know what's going on and you are not dismissed. In the meeting that I attended, the department presented and the people in the meeting said they had taken a decision that they were not going to respond to our presentations. So the meeting ended at the end of the department presentations, and that was it, unless it was another meeting that we're talking about. But the one that I attended, there was no engagement at all. So no one they were never consulted.
This was a major meeting, and a 35-page document was presented, which basically said that this single ideology is tantamount to indoctrinating small children. It also reminded the department of the fact that parents are the ones who should be consulted, because they have the inalienable right. It then also said that they should stop doing this training until parents have had the opportunity. And it also asked for a family values unit to be set up, because what's happened is that there is a unit in the department called the Social Inclusion and Equity in Education Directorate. And that is basically picking this one single ideology and effectively mainstreaming it into the education system. And we believe that there must be a diversity. There must be inclusivity. And that means including all views, not just one particular views that government might decide to pick. And obviously, these views are coming in from international quarters. Why are we going internationally to look at these things when we're looking for African solutions for African problems?
Let's, Elijah can answer.
That's the wrong way of saying it, because you see, when we take part in international studies that are benchmarking us on curriculum matters and other issues of assessments and stuff, it is accepted that we need to be competing with those countries that have gone before us in doing things. So why is it now, when we do the same on other matters, we should be looking for African solutions? We cannot have double standards here. We need to agree on what we need to do. My experience is that in this sector, you can never please everyone. The day that you do that, you must know you are doing something wrong, because there are always clashing views here. And I don't believe that what you are saying is a true representation of everybody's views in that meeting. Anyway, there was not even an engagement in that meeting. So we can't even debate what took place there, because you never really got back to ask to dissect the presentation that we made to you. So for me, this will be an ongoing debate which we need to participate in It must not end here. Let's keep talking about it, because the more we do, the more we are refining what the country needs for our own society as our society is also changing.
Well, I like that idea, Elijah. Thank you for your time, Elijah Mplanga. He's the spokesperson for the Department of Basic Education. Let's keep this conversation going and let's involve everybody and see where it goes. I know you need to run, Elijah, but thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Ons spreek 'n bietjie van 'n moeilike kwessie aan hierdie sogenaamde ECE toolkit wat hulle wil implementeer vir onderwysers in primêr en pre-primêre fases van kinders lewe. Dis 0 tot 9 jaar oud. Saam met ons op die lyn Freedom of Religion South Africa Executive Director Michael Swang. Michael, so one of the things that the spokesperson for the Department of Basic Education did mention is gender-based violence. We do understand that it's a major situation in South Africa. It's on the rise, and could something like this ECE toolkit and the implementation thereof further fuel this gender-based violence behavior in our country?
Well, you have to then think, what is actually being taught to the children here? Children are being taught essentially that a man can be a woman and a woman can be a man. Now, gender-based violence, in any event, is a lot more complex than just simply gender. It's got socioeconomic status of women in the home is a big issue. Our defunct justice system is an issue. And teaching children this gender ideology is in no way supported by scientific authority. And to say that a person's entirely subjective perception of themselves settles whether they're a man or a woman, you then got to ask yourself the question, who is gender-based violence actually then against? And I think most people would say, well, the people who are really on the receiving end are women. But now you're teaching children that there's no such thing as a woman or a man. You're simply whoever you say you are. And so you're just talking about violence. So at some point, this obviously undermines the status of women. And it would be very interesting to have asked Mr. Mslangu from the Department of Basic Education to define who is actually the on the receiving end and adversely impacted by gender-based violence. He would have almost certainly said women. But then who is a woman if this is your ideology? It's hard to define.
Mm. So if educators are to promote the transgender ideology, what impact will this have on children's psychology?
Well, Aristotle, the Greek philosopher, said, give me a child until the age of 7 and I'll show you the man. And that is because children are particularly susceptible through education to forming views when they really have no way of processing anything other than the fact that they're given these values by others. And so most parents will be teaching the children one thing, and then their teachers will come along and teach them something completely different. And of course, that obviously has the potential to cause division between children and their parents. How could that possibly be in the best interests of the child? And then, you know, if you have then the ideology, which is teaching a child that they can't believe their own eyes, that a girl can be a boy and a boy can be a girl, that's also deeply confusing. Sowing confusion into a child about their own gender identity, well, that can all have major and lifetime implications. And again, the paramount consideration that the department should be considering is, what is in the best interests of the child? Is it to confuse them? Is it to confuse them about their identity? Is it to sow division between them and their parents? And if the answer to any of those questions is, well, maybe, then the principle is, do no harm. Do no harm, and let parents be the ones who guide their little children in these areas.
Michael, so we also spoke to Rita Milan. She's a child psychologist, and we asked her the exact same question, and this is what she had to say.
Wanneer ons kyk na die geslagsontwikkeling by kinders, dan sien mens dat op ouderdom 2 weet hulle al wat se verskil tussen 'n seentjie en 'n dogtertjie. Op ouderdom 3 begin hulle al praat van hulle self as 'n seentjie of 'n dogtertjie. En dan gewoonlik op 4 is daar 'n redelike stabiele geslagsidentiteit vasgelê. Nou die sielkundige impak van hierdie transgender ideologie vir kinders 0 tot 9 jaar bring dan verwarring by so 'n kind wat dalk al reeds 'n goeie idee het wat hulle geslag is. Dit bring 'n klomp onsekerhede en as hulle dan blootgestel word aan seksuele materiaal, kan sulke kinders begin om seksuele gedrag te openbaar wat eintlik nie van pas is vir hulle ouderdom nie. 'n Kind se identiteit verwar ook in die opsig dat hy nou konflik ervaar met sy biologiese realiteit. En met ander woorde, iets word in die skool vir hom geleer of voorgehou, dat hy kan kies wie of wat hy of sy wil wees, maar hierdie keuse sal dan in konflik wees met die biologiese realiteit van die seun of die dogter se liggaam. So, as mens dan verder gaan kyk na die bevordering van geslagsblokhormone, wat dan deur so 'n curriculum basis, ek wil amper sê aan die kinders voorgehou sal word, bring dit ook verwarring by so 'n kind, en kan dit wees dat so 'n kind dit dan gebruik met natuurlik die hulp van 'n dokter, maar dalk nie met die toestemming van die ouers nie. Die gevolg daarvan is dat as hierdie kind dan oor 'n paar jaar besluit dat hulle steeds die geslag is wat biologies is, dan is daar 'n probleem. En wat hulle ook sê is dat 80 tot 95% van kinders wat hulle geslag wil verander, na 'n paar jaar dan wil hulle dit nie meer doen nie. En daarom is daar lande soos Groot-Brittanje, Swede, Finland
en verskeie ander lande. So Michael, in essence, she is explaining the same thing that you are, but one of the biggest things that has come from this ECE toolkit is, and this has been an ongoing conversation in many places, children being exposed to same-sex bathrooms at such a young age, when you know you've gone to primary school or kindergarten, and many of those bathrooms are open anyway. You have the teachers helping children to go to the bathroom, on potty trained and that kind of thing. At that age, do you think that this is a good idea, exposing children to same-sex bathrooms, or opening that up?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, the toolkit specifically says, and I'm reading from page 18, it says, trans and non-binary children may not feel comfortable using sex-segregated facilities, and they should have access to toilet facilities that correspond with their gender identity. Now, I mean, this is a transgender ideology. And I think that is what the Department of Basic Education is trying to deny, that it is actually effectively picking this one single ideology and using this as the context for the education. So whether or not little children go to one bathroom or two, I think it depends. Listen, I mean, in many schools, as you know, it's almost a luxury, sadly, that there is a proper toilet facility in the first place. But I just think that the principle is something that needs to be observed here, which is that the whole choice of toilet is now going to be based on a child's perception, which the teacher will be probing for, as to what gender they consider that they are.
Well, we also asked Rita Malana, child psychologist, what she thought about this.
As mens kyk na die gebruik van badkamers, wat ook nou deel van hierdie ideologie is, dat kinders dieselfde badkamers moet gebruik. Ek glo dat dit is eintlik 'n bedreiging van elke kind se privaatheid, omdat seentjies en dogtertjies oor die algemeen skaam is vir mekaar, sal dit vir hulle baie ongemaklik laat voel om badkamers te deel. En dit kan ook kind in gevaar stel op 'n seksuele manier, wanneer daar die intensie van iemand is om eintlik seer te maak en nie werklik die badkamers te gebruik vir wat dit eintlik die doel voor is nie.
Michael, this conversation can go on for hours, and I think this is definitely not the last time we will be checking in with you, if that's okay with you. Do you have any last thoughts that you want to leave us with, and where our listeners can go should they want to voice their opinion?
Yes, I think listeners should voice their opinion, because clearly this is a single ideology that is being infused into the pre-primary and primary school. We're talking little children here. These children have no way of processing this type of information. And if you want to make your comments known, then you must please go to the Forsa website. That's forsa.org.za or forsa.org.za. You can have two options. One is to have your say. You can write to the Department of Basic Education, you can let them know your views, because you as parents, you have the right to have your views respected. Or you can look for more information, and we do have more information on the site as well. So it's forsa freedomofreligion.org.za. Freedom of Religion South Africa, that stands for.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you so much for your time and checking in with us on this very important subject. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Michael Swain, Executive Director van Freedom of Religion South Africa. En ons het ook 'n bietjie vroeër gesels met Elijah Matlanga. Hy is die woordvoerder vir die Departement van Basiese Onderrig oor hulle ECE Toolkit. Ons het 'n klein bietjie tyd na 5 vanmiddag en ek weet baie mense het gevra, wat sê die luisteraars, hoe voel die mense hieroor? So, ons gaan die WhatsApp-lyn oopmaak, as jy dit onder 30 sekondes vir ons jou opinie kan gee, asseblief maak so 061-610-4576, dat ons hoor, hoe voel jy oor hierdie situasie?
En daar het ook 'n paar boodskappe ingekom van luisteraars wat ontsteld is, dat ons oor hierdie onderwerp gesels, maar dit is ongelooflik belangrik om onsself in te lig, want dit is die realiteit wat ons in die gesig staar.
Kuier maandag tot vrijdag saam, Dobie en Nina, 3 tot 6, net hier op die Groot Trek op Groot FM 90.5.